Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Servcast, Mobile Serve's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke, Mobile Serve's editor-in-chief, and as always, Brad Bennett, a man who still refers to himself as the bad boy of tech, no matter how many times I tell him not to.
I've been thinking about going back to host with a ghost, but we'll see.
You're going back? You're changing it?
Maybe.
Yeah? Yeah. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Pretty good. Tired. It's really early. Really early right now.
But we get to be in this awesome studio.
We do.
You guys haven't noticed.
And it's quite stunning. It's a little bit nicer than the mobile syrup digs that we're used to.
That's true.
And, of course, this week we have a little bit of a different situation. We have a guest on the podcast, Alain McKenna, a Montreal-based technology journalist that's covered the industry for decades. He currently writes for Le Devoir.
I feel old.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on. The Mobile Serve team always makes fun of me because I'm the oldest person on the team. You've been to way more Apple events than me, so I'm very excited to see your insight.
All right.
I think the way that I want to kind of structure this, just because I know we have a somewhat limited time frame, is I want to just off the top talk about the overall Wanderlust event.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys feel about it? Like, I just want to do a temperature check a little bit. Brad, what did you think?
I liked it. I mean, going into it, very excited about the phones. I'm always like hoping for new camera improvements, but honestly, the Apple Watch and Double Tap stole the show. So leaving the event yesterday and actually trying that, I think really changed my opinion on it. And I'm very excited going out of it.
Yeah. When I tried the Double Tap, it almost felt like magic. I don't know if you had the opportunity to try it out.
Yeah, it's a nice feature. It's we discussed this last night, right? There were accessibility features in the previous Apple Watch that had similar interface.
Yeah, stuff. Assistive touch.
Yeah. But it feels more refined. It feels like there were more effort put into it. And I think that gesture interfacing thing could like evolve into something pretty cool with the watch, and like in the near future or whatever.
So overall, like I don't want to like review score the event, but how did you guys feel about it? Like, did you leave with like a positive impression of what's to come in the next couple months?
I think so. I'll put a number on it. I'll give it like a high 0.5.
8.5, a solid Mobile Syrup 8.5.
I think so. I enjoyed it. It's my first iPhone event. I've only been to WWDCs in the past. So phones, watches, I'm happy. I had a good time.
What about yourself, Alain?
Well, it's a very well-tuned event because it's been doing it for many, many years, right? And there are so many rumors now before the keynote that we expect so many things that we always have to kind of lower down our expectations because obviously they have to, you know, make do with what we expect.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many things in so many directions that having just the new watches, the new phones was actually quite enough, because I think it's a very important year for Apple in terms of renewing their owners that have iPhones that want to maybe buy a new one. So they had to have that strong message on the new phones specifically. And the whole thing we saw about the environmental responsibility that Apple has put forward and saying, well,
the carbon neutral watches,
that and their targets for 2030 are pretty aggressive. So that's nice that they put this front and center instead of just saying it at the end, like, oh, by the way, we're just like doing stuff for the environment and that's it.
Yeah, it was kind of the theme of the whole event in some ways, which was I know that Apple's always had an environmental angle of things, but I think it was the first time that it felt that was like the focus beyond the products. That was the focus and the direction of the
It company. Felt like a feature being announced. Like there was a skit for it. It was really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a good segue into the actual products, which I think is something that our listeners primarily care about. So first up, we have the iPhone 15. I would describe it as it's a meaningful refresh, but it's also marginal in some ways. Brad, I know you'll get into some of the camera stuff. But off the top, obviously, there's the USB-C port. That's a big thing. A16 chip, we're not jumping to the A17, at least with the base level iPhone. 2x zoom through sensor cropping, which I think is a useful feature. I guess, Brad, how did you feel about it? Like, do you think this is a phone that if someone was rocking a 14, they'd want to move up to a 15? Or do you think it's like if you're on an older iPhone, this is kind of the year for the upgrade?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Obviously, the 1-to-1 year jump's never really like pan out being the most like exciting, especially if you're on a contract. It's hard to like buy out and buy any phones. Pretty expensive. But yeah, I don't know. I'm still a big fan of it. Similar to the 14 last year, like, and the 15 Pro this year, it's been built the way that makes them more repairable. So ideally it should last you a lot longer. I'm always a big fan of that. But the camera improvements compared to the 14, it's a 48 megapixel sensor. But in our experience, I don't know about you guys, but using the 14 Pro last year, which also had the 48 megapixel sensor, I don't think I shot that many 48 megapixel photos. Like a lot of it was the 12, whatever. So I don't think the 14 to 15 is a big jump, but similar to Alain, when you were sort of hinting at this might be a big year to refresh people. I think people coming off 12s,
oh, yeah,
this is a big jump for that.
So do you think that this is a big refresh year just for like the average Canadian consumer?
I think so. Obviously for Apple, it's a worldwide thing, right?
Yeah, because of course.
People across the world buying the phone, but the main focus was definitely on the USB-C. Talking to other people in like, you know, more broader media.
That's true. Yeah.
They would only want to talk about the USB-C port, but because that's a big change for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are all those specs that also evolved, but that's a big thing. So I think that's a big change for most. So that was enough for a new phone. But I wouldn't change the 14 for a 15 right now. It feels more like people have a iPhone 12 or, you know, older than that.
I think when the 12 switched to those squared off edges, that was like a big buying factor. New design generally brings in a lot of people. And then so that was three years from now, which I think in modern buying cycles is like phones easily last that long. So this is a good time. And I guess the one thing I will say compared to the 14 is they did round out the edges a little bit more. It's not iPhone 11 level round, but it's way less sharp than 12, 13, 14. And I'm a big fan of that. I know most people use cases anyway, but
the Pro has that too.
Yeah, right? Both of the 15 series phones have the rounded edges this year.
One of the things that stood out to me with the 15 is the fact that it's still USB 2.0 in terms of transfer speeds, even though it's USB-C. I personally don't care about USB transfer speeds because I don't remember the last time that I plugged my iPhone into my computer. Like when that notification shows up on my Mac asking if I want to give my Mac permission, I'm like, oh, that's still a thing you can do. It doesn't even occur to me at this point. Do you guys think that matters? Like you do a lot of photography work, Brad.
Yeah,
you transferred batch photos? Like, is that something?
Definitely had times. I don't know. It's tough. So because of our job, and I make a lot of videos from Mobile Startup sometimes, like last year I made a video like fully shot on the iPhone 14 Pro, and I had a year before that like a 13 Pro. So when I'm making those, I have like tons of footage, and offloading that is like, oh yeah, as much transfer speed as I can get because I'm offloading like hundreds or so clips. But in my day-to-day life, not really. I still rely on AirDrop for like 90% of my photo transfers, even short videos, anything that's like under a few minutes, AirDrop generally does it fairly consistently. You know, when I'm trying to batch drop like 50 videos, sometimes it won't work as well. But, you know, for most like casual cases, never been looking for more speed, honestly. Excited about it on the Pro, but will I ever really utilize it to that max potential? I don't know.
That's kind of how I feel about it. Alain, is that important to you, transfer speeds at all?
Well, I do most of my transfer speed wirelessly as well.
Okay.
So it's photos, sorry. And I'm thinking people that will need that extra speed on the wired connection will actually buy a Pro or Pro Max anyway, so it's no big deal for those people.
Yeah, it seems, at least to me, mostly related to like photography things, which is the Pro's bread and butter, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that I missed with the iPhone 15 in terms of photography changes that you wanted to highlight, Brad?
The 48 megapixel sensor should allow for like more detail. Apple showed off some crazy photo of like a, I don't know if it was an ultra wide or I guess it was probably a main lens shot, and then like zoomed in, you could see like a shingle detail. So that was quite interesting. It seemed like there was improvements and changes to the photonic engine, which might change how processing happens. Oh, and the portrait mode depth blur is going to be a lot better this year. I think that's on both phones, but we'll see how that pans out and how exclusive that is to the new phones too.
The one thing that I found out that I don't think we had in our initial coverage of the iPhone 15 is that the
world exclusive.
It's out there. There's people faster than us. The sensor, the 48 megapixel sensor, I believe is actually, it's not the same as the one that was in the 14 Pro. It's slightly smaller.
I'd read that. It has a slightly smaller pixel size, which shouldn't make much of a difference again, but still an improvement. And
I'm sure when I do like side-by-side photos, when I'm reviewing it, like they'll look very, very similar, comparable at least.
It's getting harder without like pixel peeping, which then leads to like diminishing returns to tell the difference.
Let's move on to the iPhone 15 Pro, which I think is sort of the bell of the ball, so to speak. USB 3.0 transfer speeds, same curved edges as the iPhone 15. One of the things that I was a big fan of is the fact that it's lighter.
Definitely.
I've found that the Pro model iPhones are very, very heavy, probably starting
really
with the iPhone 12 Pro. Like I was holding a 12 Pro Max recently, and it just felt like a brick in my hand. So I'm hyped that we're going with the titanium that feels noticeably lighter. What did you feel about that particular upgrade?
I think I like the heaviness of a higher end phone, like the iPhone X, for instance, was one that was like heavier because it has the whole metal enclosure and all that.
It was like a smaller size, so it had a good, like, compact feel. Like it felt really tight.
Yeah, it felt like a high end car, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
You should always have that
precision.
Yeah,
that's an interesting way of looking at it. I never thought about it.
But I understand why people want, you know, lighter phones, and it, even though it's larger and all that titanium stuff in it, it's actually pretty cool too. But yeah, I like something that feels heavy in your hand. Not, you know, obviously too heavy, but something that feels like you have it and it's higher end because of that, right?
That's fair enough. I think I'm excited for the weight change. I haven't like held all of them to really know, so it's a little bit of speculative to like how big of a difference it will actually make. But last year with the 14 Plus and the 14 Pro Max, I liked the weight of the Plus more. So I'm hoping it just leans a little more that way. Heft is always good. I don't mind the weight, but a little lighter like the Plus always felt a little more comfortable in my hand. So
the 14s felt quite light, like not the Pro, but the like base model one.
Yeah, exactly.
They felt quite light to me, particularly the Plus.
Yeah, the Plus, when I remember picking it up, I was like, oh, that's kind of nice, actually. So,
And then another, I think, big change worth talking about is the action button. Obviously, that's pretty big.
Very true.
I just leave my phone on mute. Like, I turn it on mute, and I never turn on my ringtone. I don't think that's a thing that like anyone does. It's just my parents is what it feels like sometimes. So I think that it's really smart for Apple to be utilizing that real estate in the hardware in a unique way. I think that it's cool that it's programmable. I was a little nervous that it wouldn't be open to third-party developers. And I mean, to my understanding, it is, but it's through shortcuts. And so there's a bit of a roundabout way of doing that. I was a little bit surprised because I thought that this would be something that the average like tech enthusiast would be into, but just a temperature check from mobile syrup readers, it didn't seem to be something that anyone either cared about, and most of the sentiment was relatively negative regarding that feature. How did you feel about the action button?
Well, I think it's a good idea. It's a good evolution of the toggle that had there forever, and that was a signature thing for the iPhone. They always had that thing, even though I think the iPod Touch had it or something.
It did, yeah.
So it's something that
and
was
the first iPad, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Is it on the first iPad, really?
I'm pretty sure.
That's cool.
So it's something pretty iconic for those devices, right? So changing it for something that gives you more customization on how it acts and all that, I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, I kind of like to build off that too. I think Shortcuts has been this thing that Apple released 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's been around for a while, but it's not something that like I think the average person is really even aware of, or especially aware of the power that it could unlock. Have you go into it and like build a few shortcuts that kind of tailor themselves to your life. So I think having a hardware button to really be like in people's face, being like, you can program this, you can make a shortcut, you could do something interesting, I think should go a long way to just making shortcuts more used, which is like a pretty powerful iPhone feature that is underutilized.
Have you ever actually, like, I think shortcuts are cool, and I remember when people were doing those like crazy designs of iPhones through shortcuts, totally changing the look of iOS.
All the icons and stuff, yeah.
I've never done anything like that myself, and the only time that I used shortcuts was to write about it. Like, I did like a little piece about it. Do you like, in regular use, actually make shortcuts?
No, similar to you. Okay, when they first announced, I wrote a guide. I made like 10, and then a couple of months after, I did another, like a follow-up.
I remember when you wrote that guide for the site.
Yeah, and I just didn't find myself using them that much. Although, I've seen my friend David on Twitter using them the other day, where he had made a widget with like more specific smart light controls within shortcuts than the Apple smart home control widget would have. So there are things like that that I kind of was like, oh, I could probably get into that, because I have a chandelier with like 5 smart lights, so having to control all of them separately or as one big group is sometimes annoying. It's like, I just want to leave one on. So maybe a shortcut for that or something. And I saw when I first did the review on the Apple Watch Ultra, which I'm embarrassed to not be wearing today, somebody had set a shortcut to like open their smart lock as they walked up to the door, and I was like, oh, that's very James
Bond.
Cool,
yeah.
So
yeah, that's smart. Yeah,
things like that, adding that to the shortcut button on the iPhone would be cool. I don't have a smart lock on my door, but I think the people that do have that kind of stuff, you can get a lot out of it.
So you know, you mentioned it. I have one shortcut that I use on my phone. It's the one to launch my iRobot vacuum at home.
That's a really good idea.
So that could be the action button on my phone now. Just click it. Vacuum straight from my phone.
I kind of see like great most idea. People now that they're kind of going to have shortcuts, not exactly thrown in their face, but more in front of their eyes, having just one or two that does make their lives a little bit easier. And I think that's a feature that you could become connected to, and will definitely keep you on iOS, because Android's not going to have the same like level of integration with if this then that or
whatever. True.
Do you wish secretly that the shortcut button was like orange, like it was a Pixel device?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like the action button on the it's called the action button, right?
Yeah. Not sure. Okay. The official name.
But yeah, like the button on the watch. I was really hoping for like an off-color accent. I thought that would be really fun. Like the Pixels used to have.
Yeah.
I always love that.
Pixels had that squeezing.
I totally forgot about that.
That was awesome. The squeeze to get Google Assistant to pop up, and you could do custom things with it too. That was a really fun one, actually. They don't do that anymore.
No, they removed it after. Yeah. I think they had it for one or
two. It was only around for one generation.
Pixel 3, I guess. Yeah, people probably didn't use it, but yeah, that was awesome. It had like haptic feedback. That was a really cool way to interact with the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So with the 15 Pro, I think some of the other changes are on the camera side. And I don't know if it was like during that portion of the presentation I was editing someone's story or something like that, but a lot of that flew over my head. Brad, you're the kind of camera nerd of the website. Do you want to recap some of the things that stood out for you regarding the iPhone 15 Pro and the Pro Max? Like, I know there's the 5x optical zoom. That's a big one. I think people are excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything else that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the zoom and work backwards, I think. So there's 5x optical zoom. That's like a big change this year, something that we've seen on Android phones for a while. And it uses... Apple had a specific term for it, but it was a way to like sort of bend the light in a small package. It wasn't exactly the same periscope design that we've seen on Android, but it does look to be using some smaller periscopes to achieve that effect over distance. And the 5X zoom also had a three-axis stabilization, which I think is the first time that third axis has been added to iPhone camera, or maybe just the iPhone zoom camera?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that should help a lot, but keeping those zoom shots stable, because for people that don't know, the further you zoom, the more your shakes in your hand become noticeable. So that's pretty cool. And then working your way back, you still have the 3x zoom that you always had, but I believe it's like a software bin similar to the 2x zoom last year. And then your 2x, and then you can also set 35, 26, and 24. I don't know about the 26, 24. There are two other focal lengths that kind of get progressively wider. So you, and then the macro. So it gives you sort of the ability to have 9 different lenses, I think, the camera. Yeah, and the part that I'm the most excited about is you can set your default focal length now. So right now when you open up the iPhone camera, it's always, I think, 26 millimeters because that's what the camera is. But now if you want it to be like, oh, I always want it to open to 35, I want that little bit more zoom, you can just set that, which is...
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, something I've been kind of championing for a while, ever since I used the ZTE AX in 30 and it had like a built-in 35 millimeter focal length equivalent. And so I always love that on phones, but most phones go wider, I think, because it's a lot of taking landscapes, taking pictures of people together. So I'm happy that I can go a little tighter just by natural. And that's really the big difference for me. There are some hardware changes too, but that's... just the more sort of fake lens options is kind of what I'm hyped about.
I don't know if you've had feedback from your readers about the 5X zoom, because it could have gone to, you know, 6. The rumors had 6X or even, I think, 10X.
There's some with like 10 times optical zoom to kind of match what Samsung's doing with the Ultra.
And I like the answer they gave us yesterday about that when I asked why not, you know, a lot bigger telephoto lens. And they said, well, you know, you can do a very crappy photo with a 10X or 20X. I mean, and this is very true. The longer you're... telephoto is, the more difficult it is to do a very sharp, very clear photo.
So yeah, there's more processing, more dehazing.
Yeah,
it just starts to look broken down. Yeah,
I do think that the 10 times that the S23 Ultra does look pretty good. Like, Samsung's figured out a way for it to work. So in some sense, like, I can't help but be slightly disappointed that Apple didn't do something similar. But on the other hand, I also feel like, for my purposes, at least the type of photos that I'm taking, five times optical is probably better. Like, I remember, I haven't reviewed a Samsung device in years, but when that feature first launched, I think with the S20, I always felt like 10 times was too close.
Yeah.
Like, it was rare that I needed to be that close to something. So
it's shaky, it's blurry, and you also lose some of the colors, because there's probably some algorithms in the background that, you know, work on the photo. But
I agree. Not to talk about other phones too much, but the 5X on the Pixel 7 Pro, I've been like in love with this year. So I'm very happy to see it come to the iPhone. I'm not sure exactly if the sort of 5X is the same exact focal length across both of them. But yeah, that I've been finding was like a really good length to like punch in, to just like, you know, a little bit over there, get across the street kind of thing. Like, that was more the distances that I wanted it for.
I'm sure Apple had some data like to indicate that that's more useful for its users too. So I get it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So next up we have the Apple Watch Ultra, which I think, beyond Double Tap, which we've talked about a little bit, and I do want to talk about it again, I think was a relatively minor update. Like, we're talking about a brighter screen. The screen was already very bright. I think
it was 2000 first gen
before. It was 2000. Okay. And then we have the S9 chip.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much the same device as last year, all things considering. And this is how the Apple Watch refresh cycle has gone for the last few years. I personally was hoping for the, I don't know if you saw it, Elaine, but there was a black model that was leaked.
Yes, I saw that. I was looking forward to that.
Similar to the color of these AirPods. Yeah.
I was hyped for that. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to wear this all the time. And that didn't happen. How did you guys feel about the Apple Watch Ultra 2 review? Reveal, I was a little underwhelmed. I was hoping for a bit more beyond just the processor bump.
Well, the Ultra, like the last year's watch, was actually pretty complete, right? I compared it to Garmin, to Suunto, to Polar watches, and that cost the same amount of money, and it was doing better in most situations, so it felt like it's still relevant today. So having just those small minor upgrades on it makes a lot of sense. And I think the main thing this year for the Apple watches, both of them, is that carbon neutral thing where they just, like,
that's a good point, very good,
you know, they're more responsible,
more sustainable,
that way. Yeah, more sustainable, and thank you. So I think that's a big thing for the watch this year. Obviously, more, you know, a brighter display and all that is actually pretty good.
I'm curious how much that will come into play in the field. Like, I felt like the 2000 was enough when I was in the sun. Maybe you could punch it up a little bit, but I'm wondering if the 3000 is really just to make the flashlight more useful.
One thing I would have liked is to have that SOS satellite thing in the watch itself, because sometimes you don't necessarily go very far, but you go in the mountain, then you don't bring the phone along. I don't bring my phone when I go outside on outdoor stuff most of the time. And that would have been, you know, a nice feature to have.
That would be cool.
I thought that was coming, personally. Like, I really thought that was this was the year they were going to announce that, so I was surprised. But Brad, you've like actually taken the Apple Watch Ultra camping. I would describe you as like Mobile Syrup's Apple Watch Ultra expert to some extent. Did you, like, are you excited to try out the two?
Like I was saying, the flashlight going a little bit brighter, like when I was camping and spending so much time kind of in the dark, I was using the flashlight on the Apple Watch Ultra a lot, actually. So getting a little bit brighter makes that a lot more useful. Other than that, yeah, I'm not sure. I guess the screen being brighter, just, I remember a lot of times, like when I was canoeing and trying to like look at the little map. Another thing, huge problem I have with Apple Watch, just in general, the maps are like dark mode only. I don't know why.
Good point. You're right.
But yeah, and so like when you're trying to use them in the sun, it's kind of counterintuitive. But anyway, the bright screen on the Apple Watch Ultra kind of negates that, especially because it's bigger. But yeah, that was like the most like sunshiny kind of spot where I was using it. So the brighter screen there. But yeah, I really wanted like another 10 hours of battery life.
I was going to say, because we have to say it, like a 40 battery life would be awesome on this thing. Probably like very hard to do, but
I think it would change a lot of people's opinions on it too. I think like the big hurdle for people that are even sportier than me kind of is the battery life. Like people really want to just like have it last and last and last.
My brother does tons of camping, and that's what he always tells me is why he can't switch to the Apple Watch Ultra is because...
And your brother does like really hardcore, like
backwoods
outdoor,
camping. Yeah, he's gone like for 2 weeks, canoeing all over the place, that kind of thing, where he doesn't really have the opportunity to charge, and that's part of why he is just like stuck on Garmin devices.
Yeah, but even just for a weekend, you go camping outside and you just, you know, somewhere where there are no wireless signals, so you actually don't need your phone really except for photos or whatever.
Oh, actually,
so you leave it in the car and then you go camping, and if having your watch functional for the whole weekend would be actually a big plus
for sure.
Yeah, well, the Ultra should get you close to the whole weekend, I think, but yeah, I agree. Yeah. An extra little bit, but also one thing we talked about leaving the phone in the car is it have on-device Siri on the watches now.
That's good,
which is kind of cool. Yeah, something that I didn't use that often in my like regular life, but when I was camping, I felt like I was in situations with just my watch more, and it was like setting cooking timers on the watch, like doing able to do things, and that's, I had data, so I was able to use Siri effectively then. But in situations where I don't, that's pretty cool, and I'm excited that on-device Siri can watch us for sure.
Yeah, when I go camping, I actually have an RV, and I have like an outdoor Bluetooth radio, so I can actually put music, and I pair it with my watch and not my phone, because, and that's having the signal and having the watch standalone and more battery life. That would be the perfect setup for me.
But that'd be cool.
Yeah, that's the short battery life is what makes it.
So in the interest of time, we'll blast through the Series 9 2000 nit screen upgrade, obviously, from the S8 series, and the S9 chip, and a new color, which I can never remember
pink
what
aluminum.
It's called.
Pink aluminum.
Because I know we're like, is it pink gold, rose gold? What's it?
Yeah. I asked a dude at the event yesterday, and he said it was pink aluminum.
Pink aluminum.
He asked another guy, and then he said pink aluminum. So down the chain, we got to figure it out.
I think, again, it's a relatively minor update. Most of the new features are brought on by watchOS 10, which I think is stellar. I've been using it for quite some time. I think a lot of people are really going to like watchOS 10. I guess with the Series 9, it's double tap, coming back to double tap. Like double tap was very cool. I think that Apple's doing something with design language there where there's a crossover with the Vision Pro, which is very fascinating. It's almost like they're trying to train people to think about that pinch gesture in the same way that you would use a trackpad or a touchscreen with multi-touch, that kind of thing. Because I want to move on to something a little bit different. We'll just leave the Series 9 at that.
You don't think we should just spend the rest of the time talking about Double Tap? What else do you got? What else do you got in there? I got so much.
So here we could talk about Double Tap, or I wanted to ask Elaine his favorite Apple event moment.
Well, I just want to throw something in because you're talking about the Vision Pro and the watch. Yeah. You know how when they showed the Vision Pro, they said you can look at the MacBook display and it will pop up. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping they'll have a secret feature when the Vision Pro comes out. You can do that with an Apple Watch.
That would make a lot of sense.
Series 9,
very cool.
Series 9 would fit pretty well in that.
That would be cool. Talk about Double Tap. We'll let you have your say about Double Tap, and then I'll throw to him, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I read this before dinner last night. I didn't get to talk to you about it, but a few years ago there was an Apple patent that came out for a ring that you would use to control a computer interface, and this really feels like the watch taking that place for perhaps the Vision Pro, perhaps mm-hmm. for other things. But I don't know if you guys remember, like years ago there was like these Kickstarter for like armbands you would wear that you could like twist.
There was a Canadian startup that with
Myo.
Fingers,
Myo. Like Myo or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, now are we actually going to see sort of that come to fruition through the Apple Watches? And in a long time in the Apple ecosystem, the Apple Watch has been like that like add-on that you get. You're like, okay, I have the phone, I have a computer, I might as well get the watch, maybe I'll do some running, like whatever. But it was never super necessary. But if it becomes this new control scheme paradigm, the watch instantly like rockets almost to the second place in the Apple ecosystem. Listen, I think that's a really interesting sort of like path that they've set the watch on that I was not expecting at all.
I received a Motorola phone last week for something else entirely, but they still have those gestures that you can quickly activate stuff. And I feel like we don't use gestures enough in the electronics world. This thing could probably do much more gesture controls.
I remember at WWDC too, they were talking about how with watchOS 10, there was gonna be more precise like wrist controls for like golf swing tracking and stuff, which leads me to believe that there would be a lot more precision gestures that can be unlocked mm-hmm. once we kind of get used to Double Tap and they allow us to try.
Yeah, I think there's a full potential there of way to interact with your watch, your phone, whatever.
Exactly. And through
just not tapped into at this point.
Other things like universal control. There's like a lot of groundwork here to be really connecting things and really like wirelessly controlling things. It's futuristic and who knows, but Minority Report.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more Apple Watch gestures like even as soon as next year. Like,
oh, yeah.
This is like the start of something very different for what Apple's doing. And I know there were like a fair amount of negative jokes about the gesture on the internet saying that like it kind of looks stupid. Do you really want to stand there doing that? And I mean, my answer to that
is not standing there. It's like on your side. Like,
sure.
You're just very casual.
And I would rather do that than like talk to Siri in public personally. Like that's how how I think about it. Those are all the like core things that were revealed at the event. There's a few things that I wanted to get to that we don't have time for, like talk a little bit more about the environment or the fine woven cases, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm a case guy. I
guess we could say we felt them. They kind of felt like suede. They seemed to have like a nice tough edge on them. We're going to test them more, but I'm as excited about the new cases.
And there's a bunch of new Apple Watch bands that I'm excited about too. I always like the new bands and the new cases. Those are things that hype me up.
Some of the, I wish I could remember the specifics. Maybe I should have wrote this down, but there are some bands that are specific or completely carbon neutral and some that are just like semi-renewable. So
some have recycled plastic and stuff like that. Yeah.
Just to wrap things up, Elaine, just because we have you on the Syrupcast.
We've trapped you here.
We have your attention. You've been to a lot of these events over the years. Like, what was your favorite moment from any Apple event that you've personally attended?
Well, I'm just going to take a step back first and say those pre-recorded videos, talking to Apple, they should stop that. We need to have those human back on stage, even if it doesn't go as planned all the time. Having that human on stage talk to us is
sometimes
much more fun.
Sometimes when it doesn't go as planned, those create like exciting moments in a way that aren't always negative for Apple.
I know it's probably like unnecessary in terms of risk of doing live stuff demos, because that was the thing this was in San Francisco on the Moscone Center or whatever they would do it. Having that connection with those people on stage, I felt like it was more exclusive, or it was more fun being there in person, because now you can stream it and see the same thing at home. And I get it why they do that. I mean, I totally understand. But as a reporter, it's nice to be there and have that exclusive access to people.
Totally, I agree.
Obviously, there are briefings and everything after, but that's okay. And the Apple Park is awesome. It's a very nice setup. The Steve Jobs Theater is amazing. The sound, everything is perfect. But being in the city, being in that area where there's more stuff happening around it, that was pretty cool in the past, too. That's something. That's the one thing I would miss, I would say, being in the city itself. But other than that, coming here is just awesome, because it's everything is new. Everything works. Everything's just pretty great.
Yeah, and, quite unique and feels.
There are no glitches. Everything is just like very well you know, pre-arranged. Oh, so that's pretty cool.
I think I only, like, my time covering Apple, I think I only went to one event that was in the Moscone Center. Is it Moscone or Moscone?
I don't know.
I say both. I've always wondered.
I only did it once, and like it is night and day. And I do agree with you that there's something about just seeing people on stage when you're watching it in person that's different than the live streams. And like I totally understand why Apple's taking that direction with the presentations, but
helps it go global. I think
it does. Yeah, and I mean they're more produced, they're slicker, that kind of thing. But yeah, generally speaking, it would be nice to see more in person stuff again like that. Yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap up the Syrupcast. You can find me on Twitter at @Patrick_O'Rourke, and of course on mobileserve.com. We have a ton of content on the site right now.
Lots more coming.
Yeah, lots more coming. Well, by the time people listen to this, all of our hands-ons with the various devices will be up on the site. We published like an insane amount of news yesterday. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff up there to take a look at. And Brad, where can people find you?
You can find me pretty much anywhere online at TheBradFed, and then of course on mobilesyrup.com and our YouTube channel is doing stuff over there. We put a couple of short form videos up yesterday, and I wrote hands-on with the Apple Watch.
Yeah, that should be up on the site now.
Yeah, that'll be up by the time. Oh, that's up now as we're recording, so it'll be up.
And last but certainly not least, Elaine, where can people find you, and is there anything that you want to promote on the podcast today?
I'm fairly easy to find. I'm my handle is Mecken, MCKEN, on most social platforms, so anywhere you want to look for it. You have to brush up in your French though, because that's mostly what I do everything in French. But that's where I'll put my content on those platforms, so that's where you'll find me.
As sometimes I'll see you tweet something, and I, like, because I am not smart enough to speak two languages, I don't know what you're saying, but then I'll speak to my wife, who is bilingual, and be like, hey, what is Elaine saying here? And she'll let me know, and then I'm like, yes, now I understand what he's talking about. But yeah, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was super fun.
And that's it. Thanks for listening and watching. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.